It's the Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. I'm Trace Yellis with Senate Republican Leader John Braun. It was just Labor Day. What is the climate for labor in Washington State right now?
Well, I mean, it's a complex labor market, and I think broadly it's maybe plateaued a little bit. We had, you know, a couple years there where unemployment was particularly low, and it was really giving workers a lot of options to find the employment that best suited them, negotiate for a wage that allowed them to live reasonable in our state, and that's slowed a little bit. But still good, and we still see wages rising, particularly for lower income and middle income folks. The challenge is that because of the policies, both regulatory and tax policies of the Democratic majority, their wages are not going up enough to meet the increasing costs for food, gas, housing, childcare, healthcare are all going up faster than pretty good increases in wages.
What can the legislature do to help in that area?
Well, for one thing, they should stop trying to think they understand the whole world and can regulate and tax in ways, you know, they have this illusion that they can magically come up with tax policy that doesn't drive up the cost of living for everybody in the state. And they're just fundamentally wrong. I mean, we just saw this huge tax increase from the last session and lots of talking about how they crafted it just so it worked. And the truth is, all these costs are being passed through to normal people who are trying to live their lives in Washington. And the fact is, they can't really afford it, even with higher wages.
Companies are, I mean, they are getting taxed more, but they are still creating jobs here in Washington. What about employers? Do you think that they're in a position that in the, you know, near-term future here, they're going to be able to hire more people, or do you see them cutting back?
Of course, every company is going to be different. But I think broadly, there's been a very strong signal sent to employers here in Washington that Washington's not a great place to do business, that it's going to be more and more expensive, not just on the tax side, which is a big, big deal. I don't think people fully understand just how hard these increases in taxes are going to be on our economy, the economy here in Washington, but also on the regulatory side, what that's doing, the labor law, and contrary to what the Democrats think, most employers, you know, are very conscious and very thoughtful about making sure they're taking good care of their employees. They recognize that their employees are the key to their long-term success. And they don't need more law, more regulation, more cost. They would much prefer to take that money and put it into benefits that help the employees directly. But the Democratic majority doesn't understand it. They think they somehow understand, in spite of the fact that most of them have never signed the front side of a paycheck, they think they somehow magically understand what really matters to workers in the state of Washington. What really matters is good working conditions and good quality pay. And the way you do that is by creating an economic environment where current companies can flourish and therefore afford to support their employees at a fair and hopefully lucrative manner.
Do you think generally employees and employers here in Washington get along, are partners, are working together, or do you see it as mostly an adversarial? I feel like sometimes maybe Democrats see it as, you know, predominantly an adversarial relationship. I'm not sure how you see it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how they see it. They think it's two sides fighting against each other, and that's just plainly not my experience. And I think that's true at most well-run companies, that the companies are looking for ways to make their employees happier, therefore more productive, therefore the company is successful, therefore they can turn around and reward their employees more. It's very much, you got to work together to make this work. Most employees and employers get that and do exactly that. They try to work to make the organization successful, because organizational success will lead to individual success, not the other way around.
Some Democrats may say, well, he talks about, you know, employees being treated well and all of this, but, you know, you are opposed to the law that went into effect this year that allows striking workers to collect unemployment. I know in the past you've been opposed to some minimum wage hikes. What do you say to people who say, well, there you go, there's the evidence that Senator John Braun and Republicans are not supportive of workers?
two different issues, but I'll address both of them. First of all, the unemployment insurance for striking workers is deeply unfair. The system is designed to provide income for folks who are unable to work through no fault of their own. That means they were laid off, perhaps they lost their job for any number of reasons, and it's a safety net, right? That's what's, you know, a strike is not through no fault of their own. They chose to strike, and you know, they have that right. You know, they have the right to organize. They have the right to strike. I don't begrudge them that. I don't know that it always gets them the outcome they want, but it sometimes does, and they have the right. But the idea that we're going to say a select group of folks who strike, they get this extra pay. And by the way, the rest of the folks also have to pay for it. So it's hard to put an exact number on it from year to year, but say 5, 10% of the folks strike and get this benefit. What about the other 90 or 95% of the people out there working hard every day who are going to pay for that benefit? That's not fair. That's, in fact, that's deeply unfair. So do we want to help workers? Yes, we want to help workers. Is this a way to help all workers in a fair way? 100% no. It's a policy driven by a small section of workers. And Washington has more organized workers than other states, but nowhere near a significant majority, not even a plain majority, not even half a majority are organized in our state. So why are we trying to place the burden on everybody for a benefit for a few people?
Are you anti-union? I mean, I've heard, you know, it's interesting. Senator Curtis King, who's the transportation lead for Senate Republicans, he regularly meets with union members, and it seems like they have a good relationship. I think I've heard Democrats say the Republicans here in Washington State are anti-union. What would you say to that?
I'd say that's just propaganda. They're trying to force a divide. I don't think we're anti-union. I also, just like Senator King, I meet with leaders from the trade unions on a weekly basis to talk to them about what, and it doesn't mean we agree on everything, but we agree on a lot of things. They understand in particular that for their members to be successful, the business segment and the businesses in that segment have to be successful. So there's a lot of common ground. I'd say much more common ground than differences of opinion. So no, I'm not anti-union. I don't think most Republicans are anti-union. We are pro-worker, and that means both unionized worker and non-unionized worker. We're pro-economy, which means, you know, sometimes we disagree with particularly the public sector unions who have a very partisan, very government-centric view, and don't seem to understand that it's the private sector in our state and in our country that truly fund all the things that government ultimately is able to do. So
I think that's an interesting point that we maybe don't talk about enough, the difference between public sector unions and private sector unions. It's really, in many cases, a different animal, isn't it?
Very much a different animal, and the fundamental difference is if you're a union on the private side, at some level you understand, you know, you want to negotiate in the best interest of your members, all fair, that's appropriate. But you also understand if you push it too far, you can run that business either out of Washington or maybe just out of business entirely, and that's certainly not a win for your members. So there's a balance, right? You want to strike a good deal for your members, but not one that prohibits their future employment because it makes it financially infeasible. On the public side, you know, the government's not going to go out of business. It's not how it works, right? So it's simply a fight between, you know, more money, and the money comes from more taxes from people who, you know, that don't, you know, that don't really get a say in that negotiation. They don't get the, you know, they get to, I guess at some level they get to vote, but they have less and less direct say. And yet they got to pay the bill in the form of new taxes. So it's a whole different. And then, of course, I mean, we could get deep into this, but the idea that in our state, the public sector unions are broadly negotiating with Democrats who are either in the majority in the legislature or in the governor's office, who are also receiving the lion's share of the financial support from the public sector unions. And again, none of that is illegal or on its face, but certainly doesn't strike the average person as fair and balanced.
It's interesting because public employees, even though the budget was super, super tight and Democrats said they had to raise taxes, did raise taxes to fund that budget, public employees got a here in the state of Washington got a pretty good raise that you didn't think was appropriate, actually.
No, we push back pretty hard on that. And it's not because we don't want to see public sector employees well compensated. They should be, and the truth is they are. And I've made this point over and over again. In 38 out of the 39 counties in Washington, average public sector employment is higher than private sector employment, wages, that is. In fact, like right here where I'm at right now in Lewis County, average public sector employee is making about $17,000 a year, more than the average private sector employee. That's a big difference. So the idea that we should, that somehow we aren't rewarding public sector employments is just not true. And that doesn't even count the fact that they have arguably the best healthcare insurance in the state, and they have pension, you know, defined benefit pensions that literally nobody else in our state has on the private sector. So from a compensation standpoint, public sector employees are doing really well, and yet they come back in a year like this where we had a billion, you know, multi-billion dollar deficit and say, we've negotiated for the largest pay increase in our state's history. $4 billion is how much it cost over 4 years. That's a huge increase, and one that we just plain couldn't afford. And that doesn't mean they should get nothing. We, you know, under the law, and there's a very clear way, and the way, frankly, I think it should have happened is the governor should have looked at it and said, look, we can't afford this. His predecessor negotiated, but the reality is we can't afford it. These are financially infeasible. That's allowed by the law, and would mean they have to go back to the negotiating table and come up with something they can't afford. That seems fair. What the Republicans proposed was slightly different. We said, you know, look, we don't want to leave public employees behind. We proposed a $5,000 bonus for every employee. And that actually meant more money for folks making less than about 80 grand a year. So it was pretty lucrative. But also recognize the fact that when you give percentage bonuses, you're creating more wage separation. You know, if it's a 3% increase for somebody making 60 grand a year and a 3% increase for somebody making 120 grand a year, the one person got twice as much of an increase, but their cost of eggs and milk and gas didn't go up by twice as much. They just got more money. I've always thought that was fundamentally unfair. If you're doing increases to address the cost of living over time, it's just unfair to say we should use a percentage system. So we did a bonus. It was good for folks at the lower end of the scale. It also would require them to go back and negotiate a longer-term deal, again, completely appropriate, but didn't put billions of dollars of new cost on taxpayers to fund unsustainable and unaffordable raises for public sector employees.
And you've seen an example, or you've heard, at least anecdotally, of this example of state employees doing well because private companies aren't able to compete for employees, for a scarce number of employees. So a lot of these workers end up going to work for the state because it's, you know, just better pay, better deal, better benefits, like you said, than they could get in the private sector. You've heard that that's actually causing a problem for the private sector.
Yes. In fact, I was just talking to a person today who was just sharing his experience. He runs a company that serves a lot of, this is mostly in healthcare, his customers. And he just, one after the other, saying, hey, we're hiring entry-level folks. We're training them for 6 months to a year. And then they're immediately leaving to go to work for the state for more money. Most of the time, or often at least, this is all anecdotal, often they're going to work for more money and working from home, so much more convenient, less cost for travel. And of course, they get all the other benefits that go with state employment. So particularly around where I live, just south of the Capitol, this particular reference that I was talking about was mostly in and around Olympia. Folks who are hiring are having a tough time keeping employees because the state keeps hiring them away. And that's pretty hard to run a business when you have this constant churn of people turned over. And it's somewhat ironic, right? Because I remember this year we had the hearing for this big collective bargaining agreement and the $4 billion that go with it. I questioned the Office of Financial Management why we needed this. What's driving this? And they made the claim that, oh, it's because we're worried about turnover. Well, when you actually dig into the numbers, you'll find our state's turnover is around 10%. And that includes retirements and all the stuff that any reason people would leave. better than most, you know, most public sector jobs around the state at the local level, better than most public sector at other states around the country, and much, much better than most private folks. So they're actually sitting pretty when it comes to turnover. And because they just keep paying more and more and more, they're causing worse turnover problems for the private sector, the economy that really has to pay the bill for all this.
Earlier, I had mentioned minimum wage increases. Washington has among the highest minimum wages in the nation. In some cities, Seattle, even higher than the state minimum wage. What are your thoughts on minimum wage?
Oh my, I don't begrudge people making more money. I just think it's the wrong way to get there. I mean, the reality is, even in our area, which is not as expensive as Seattle, I'd certainly concede that, you know, rare for entry-level employees to start at minimum wage. Even if you go to like fast food and you're hiring, they're not hiring at minimum wage. They're hiring at what the market demands. And that's always going to be a better mechanism for figuring out what folks' work is worth, is the market, what will the market demand? And especially I said it was flattening a little bit, but still pretty good labor market. Workers can go out there and compete based on their individual skills or talent and find, wages that are routinely above minimum wage. So I just think it's not really solving the problem, and it has the risk of doing real harm. When collectively, and this is driven by the Democratic majority, we say we know better than the market, we are almost always wrong. And so it's just, and most economists will tell you the same thing. This isn't something I dreamed up. This is the wrong way of going about getting folks to a higher standard of living.
I read a Wall Street Journal report recently talking about teenagers, 16 to 19-year-olds, who typically would be working, and that number is a lot lower. And they say part of that may be because of the minimum wage, is, you know, companies just aren't hiring teens anymore. I don't know if you've seen that at all.
Yeah, I have. In fact, I use the same example. I just talked about like fast food hiring above minimum wage. They're also hiring less. That's true. I mean, go to McDonald's. I don't go to McDonald's that much, but I notice when I go now, you have to order on the screen or on your phone. They're finding ways to reduce total number of employees, which means less opportunity for young folks who could get valuable real life experience working that will help them later in their life by working some of these jobs. They're just not available to them often.
There were demonstrations and protests on Labor Day. You hear a lot about this workers over billionaires, economic inequality and corporate influence and those types of things. Is that something that you're concerned about at all, that, you know, that these billionaires are exerting too much control over the economy and the little guy, people in like your hometown, like Centralia, are getting pushed aside and really ignored?
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, and I'm not here, and I don't show up in Olympia to defend billionaires, but I also don't see them getting extraordinary influence, because of their individual success. And I don't begrudge them the success. What I want to do is make sure everybody has the opportunity to that success. And it doesn't mean everybody's going to. They're going to make different choices. They're going to have different skill levels. But everybody ought to have that opportunity. But in the end, they just get one vote, just like everybody else. And there are a ton of other influences. And the last thing, which I think it's always kind of surprising to me, is if you actually look at the politics of most billionaires these days, they're not Republican by and large. Maybe they're apolitical, but more often than not, they tend to be on the left side of the political spectrum. So it's always kind of chuckle a little bit, at least inside, when I see, left-leaning activists protesting against the very same billionaires who are supporting their causes. That doesn't really make sense to me. Nor do I think it necessarily fixes the underlying problem. I'm with them. I want to make a life more affordable for average Washingtonians. I would like to see people have great opportunity to find employment they enjoy and that they can make a good living at. But blaming on billionaires is, I think, truly a waste of time. We help them by giving them opportunity, reasonable regulation, reasonable tax levels, and set them free to do good things on their own.
It is. I sometimes I think, and I wonder if you see it this way too, that, and maybe this happens on both sides of the aisle, that you try to find a boogeyman, really. You know, yeah. It's got to be this is responsible for my lot in life right here. It's either a billionaire or whatever. I mean, whatever it may be, you know, it's.
Yeah, I mean, in you know, today's culture, it's convenient to find a villain you can blame it on. And the left certainly likes to find villains, whether it's big business or billionaires or anything that they can paint as the bad guy. And certainly the world's not, you know, I'm not making a claim the world is 100% just, that we're humans and there will be some level of unfairness. But broadly, if I think that in the end, we're each, you know, ourselves, our families, our communities have a lot more to do with our success than some villain boogeyman out there that the other side can paint as the cause.
Now, there was a lot of talk from these demonstrators about economic justice. And I was trying to think, you know, what economic justice is. Like, they were concerned about economic justice in Washington. What is that? I really don't know. I'm not trying to be facetious here. I don't.
I think it's all part of the lingo that the left uses when they want to. You know, they love lingo. They love to create their own language because it makes them feel like they're superior. They know more. That they're wiser. They're more understanding of the world than the folks that don't understand their language, that aren't using their language. And the truth is, at least in my experience, it just disconnects them even more from the average people that they claim to want to support. The average people don't want to hear terms like economic justice. They want to understand that they can go find a job, make a good wage, get, you know, regular increases, and that the cost of living, you know, I said before, food, gas, housing, childcare, healthcare, isn't going to go up faster than their earnings go up. And that's exactly what's happening in Washington right now. So the Democratic majorities and the left activists can throw out, you know, fancy sounding terms like economic justice, but in the end, it does nothing but alienate them from the very people who are struggling in our state to make it, to pay their bills and to take care of their families and to support their communities.
Those same demonstrators say there seems to be a weakening of the social safety net. Things like in our state, I guess Medicaid would be an example. Do you agree with that? Or maybe do you agree? Do you think there are different reasons for it? I mean, is the social safety net getting, I don't know, thinner?
Well, we know that in the budget passed by the Democratic majority and signed by the Democratic governor, there were huge hundreds of billions of dollars taken out of state funding for and federal funding because of the match for Medicaid. So, yeah, I mean, the Democrats, it was a full-on assault, particularly on our hospitals during this last session. So is it getting, are there problems? Yes, there are problems, and they lay 100% at the feet of the Democratic majority and Democratic governor. They will try to blame it on actions at the federal level. I think they're wrong. The federal spending for Medicaid has gone up tremendously in recent years. Even with the recently passed bill, it will continue to increase. The risk is that we have to find a way to, you know, the money has to come from somewhere, and we need to manage it wisely and carefully to make sure that the folks who really deserve it, in the case of Medicaid, you know, seniors, disabled, pregnant women, other vulnerable folks who really need Medicaid, we have to manage it so that they have it when they truly need it. Yeah, I think it's true that it is getting weaker, but those are most of the stuff happening in our state today is a direct result of decisions made by the Democratic majority in the legislature and signed by the Democratic governor.
Do you think when it comes to workers, Democrats and Republicans in Olympia can find common ground? It seems to be an area where maybe one area where you could actually have civil discussions with the other side. And, you know, I think you've demonstrated here that Republicans do care about workers, and you haven't said anything implying that you think Democrats don't care about them. So if both sides care about workers, is there middle ground to be found in this area?
I think so. I mean, I believe there's always middle ground. I think that's oftentimes the best policy. The frustrating thing for us, you know, for Republicans in the minority right now is there's less and less interest by the Democratic majorities in finding that middle ground. They are increasingly being co-opted by the very far left activists within their own caucuses, in many cases, not even a majority of their caucus that's driving this you know, kind of activist driven agenda that's not the middle ground. But is there a middle ground? Heck yes, there's always a middle ground. And we should be, and we you see it on the floor of the Senate, you see in committees where Republicans are repeatedly offering solutions, offering amendments to controversial bills to bring them closer to something that would be common sense and acceptable to a broader number of folks. We and we'll continue to do that. That's the right thing to do. And I think ultimately that will lead to a recognition by the public that the policies that make their lives better, their families' lives better, are exactly what Republicans are pushing for in Olympia.
I sometimes think there should be a law that requires all of us from Western Washington to go to Eastern Washington at least, you know, a few times in our lifetime, because I was just over there last week and it always occurs to me how different it is. I mean, in so many ways, but, you know, it just, the economy is completely different. A lot of agriculture. In a lot of the members of the Senate Republican caucus, a lot of Senate Republicans are from Eastern Washington. They have, they come here to Olympia with a whole different set of concerns, don't they, for their workers. And you know, obviously working in agriculture is totally different than working in Boeing or Microsoft. So what are some of the challenges unique to that part of the state, and how can the legislature address some of those things?
I think I would say at two levels, and I would caveat first. I've never worked in ag. I have relatively limited experiences there, so I don't want to speak as an expert. About half of our caucus comes from the east side of the state, and the vast majority of legislators from the east side of the state are Republican. Now, there's one Democrat in the Senate that comes from the east side. And what they've seen, especially in last year's, is really an assault on agriculture from the Democratic majorities, from a couple different angles, from an environmental angle. And the folks living in Seattle love to assume that folks on the east side don't really appreciate the environment around them. And it couldn't be more wrong. They have lived, they make their living in the environment. They care deeply about it, and they understand from real world practical experience how to preserve that environment. And I think that's very much underappreciated by folks who represent downtown Seattle or thereabouts. So I think that is one issue where they've been under a lot of pressure from the west side Democratic legislators. The other one is with labor, and agricultural labor is a complicated thing. But the idea that somehow, again, folks who have never really worked in or never really, in an organization or as an individual in agricultural labor from the west side, from the urban area in King County, can show up in Olympia and dictate regulation for agricultural labor to the folks who are actually having to make it work and are showing up in good faith saying, hey, this will not work the way you think it would work, and it will not provide a better living standard for agricultural workers. And yet the folks from the urban areas just disregard that. It's maddening. And it's actually resulted in, frankly, a lower standard of living for many agricultural workers because they don't understand what they're doing and what, either from driving folks out of agricultural to begin with, or making it so they can't make money. And the classic example has been this debate we've had over the last several years about overtime for agricultural workers and the understanding of how they make their money during seasonal work. They just flat out don't understand it. And it's not about, and for them, it's no longer, the Democratic majority, it's no longer about making sure these workers can make more money to support their families. It's all about getting their way on a policy that they really don't understand the implications of.
Well, good. Literally, agriculture workers from Eastern Washington, some of them who didn't even speak English that well, came over here and testified against some of these, some of these bills and some of these laws that are the Democrats say are meant to help them. And yet they're here testifying against them.
Yeah, they just don't want to listen. They have a very ideological viewpoint of what's the right policy, and they are somewhat indifferent to, maybe more than somewhat, largely indifferent maybe to the real world experience, the lived experience, as they would say, of folks who are working in the agricultural industry.
I would imagine if you don't treat your workers well, we have a I think three farmers in the Senate Republican caucus, I talked to them and they said, hey, if you don't treat your workers well, they don't come back. If they don't come back, we've got a problem.
That's right. I mean, and in the end, it's a business. It's just like any other business. You have to treat your employees well, but they have unique conditions because of the seasonal nature of the work. And they have different challenges when it comes to workforce. And they know very well, if you don't have the workforce for all the activities, harvest in particular, but that go into farming, you're not going to make it very long. So they treat their folks well because they know it's the right thing to do and because they know it's the right business decision.
If you have people come to you and say, you know, I have a teenager and we don't know exactly what to do. He may be college, but he isn't the greatest student but can kids still get a job out of high school anymore? I mean, they probably need some training, right? I mean, for people new to the labor market, what would your recommendation be?
Well, I think, contrary to some of their belief, most folks just entering the labor market don't really know. I mean, they don't have enough experience to, some young folks, they know what they want to do with their life, right? And bless them. They're lucky to be in that position. But most don't. So my simple advice is get in early. Find something. Even if doesn't seem perfect, find it and go, do it and do it the best you can. My experience is if you put everything you can into a job, you'll always get more out than you put in, whether it's an experience or training or compensation. So you're going to find something good there. And it may not be something you do all your life. More than likely, it is not. But it'll be a step down that road. It'll build some skills and some experience. It'll take you to the next step. And then you just got to, be clear-eyed about what you like to do, what you're good at, and what you can, make a living at, and make choices accordingly. So there's no magic solution there, I don't believe. But I think getting involved and finding ways, looking for work that you can truly enjoy, because in the end, you're going to spend a bulk of your life working. Find something you like to do. Don't be afraid to work, but try to find something that you really enjoy. And whether that's something that requires a degree, if it does, go get it. If it just requires a certification, go get it. If it just got to work hard on the job and gain experience, go do that. There's no one right answer for everybody.
People may not realize that there are different options out there. There are trade schools, there are technical colleges, there are apprenticeships, all those types of things, right? And there are a lot of jobs that pay really, really well that you may not even realize. I mean, let me tell you, being an electrician is a good job.
The apprenticeships, I'm glad you mentioned apprenticeships. I should have mentioned earlier. I mean, we have a good, but I would like to make it great. We're just not there yet. Apprenticeship program in our state. I think we need more apprenticeships. The electrician is a great example, but there are others in trades and professional or semi-professional occupations. Or if you want, you can get those skills without a bunch of college debt, and build that experience, and you can get it. You can do really well.
I've heard I had a Democrat tell me one time, it seems like Republicans are pushing people not to go to college. So I think all the Republicans I know went to college, at least some. I mean, at least the ones I work with, right? I certainly don't see you as anti-college.
I went to college. My wife went to college, but I know a lot of very capable folks. In fact, some of the most capable folks I know, college or no college, did not go to college. So there's no one right. And Republicans are anti-college. You remember, Republicans are the ones that actually brought tuition down back in 2015 to make it more accessible for everybody. We're not anti anything. We are pro freedom. We want folks to be able to find the employment option that works best for them and their family, and thrive and enjoy doing that.
How big of a part of your job as senator and Senate Republican leader is taking care of workers here in our state? How much of your time and energy? I mean, there's obviously you spend time and energy on helping businesses, but that in a sense also helps workers. I mean, I would imagine just from, I think back to each session I've been a part of, it's a lot, right? I mean, a lot of time is spent on working.
I would actually say 100% of the time. I mean, whether sometimes it's not obvious. I mean, if you're working on labor policy, that's obvious. But even if you're working on a budget, a sustainable budget that doesn't overtax people is good for workers, right? I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about the current Republican coalition. It's very much centered on working people. Yes, we are still, pro-business. Yes, we are still, for a free economy. But all this is towards the end, which is creating a good set of opportunities in life for average normal people. So I actually think everything we do these days is about working people and making their life better in one way or the other. Sometimes it's not a one-to-one connection, but almost, I think without exception, it is driving towards better opportunities for folks here in the state of Washington.
All right. That's Senator John Braun, Senate Republican leader. I'm Tracy Ellis. This is The Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus.